Welcome to The Buzz with ACT IAC, your source for the hot topics and top issues affecting the federal technology market. Join us each week to hear insights from government and industry experts, stay informed on the challenges facing the public sector, and gain access to valuable reports and thought leadership. Enjoy. Hi, listeners. This is Colin Larson. The Great Resignation. By now, you've probably seen a couple dozen headlines about this phenomenon, or maybe you know someone who themselves has quit their job in the past year. But it's more than just a buzzword. The data shows that more and more workers, of all economic levels and across all sectors, are leaving their jobs, usually in search of something better, whether that's simply higher wages or better benefits or maybe something more intangible. The pandemic has caused a shift in employee priorities, and organizations are learning that they will have to adapt to these new priorities to create a better experience for their workforce. But how? Well, my guest this week is an expert in this very subject. Sharika Ekbo is the Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer at Anaplan, and with over 20 years' experience in human capital management, she's seen firsthand how the pandemic has affected people's work lives. As a quick side note, this is the first episode of The Buzz ever recorded face-to-face in person. I was able to sit down with Sharika a couple weeks ago at Imagination ELC 2021, where she moderated a panel on this very subject. Pretty cool. So, anyway, please enjoy the episode. Sharika Ekbo, thank you so much for joining me for the first in-person interview on The Buzz. You just finished moderating a panel called Recruit, The Adventure Awaits, which was about how IT organizations can adjust to the new recruiting and talent acquisition landscape, much of which has been affected by the COVID pandemic.
Yes.
You opened up the session by mentioning the Great Resignation, which is, of course, I'm sure something many of our listeners have heard about in the news lately. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics announced that 4.3 million Americans, which is almost 3% of the entire workforce, quit their jobs in August. This is not sector specific. In fact, tech has one of the highest rates of resignation.
Healthcare and tech.
Yes, exactly. As the Harvard Business Review pointed out, these are two sectors where workloads were increased significantly as a result of the pandemic.
Absolutely.
So in addition to that, what are some of the other factors that you see driving this trend of resignation?
Well, I think that people are have taken the time that they were at home or out of the office to really do some personal reflection. And the resignations that I've been privy to have fallen in a couple of different buckets. The first was really around wanting to transition from one industry to another. So I've had several people that said to me, hey, I've been in tech a long time. It's a really fast-paced industry. I want to explore something different. And so they used the reflection time as an opportunity to look and explore and make that pivot. The second one, I think, was a bit more exploratory in that people were just saying, you know what, I'm going to do what I want to do. And it's really around what they're passionate about. So one example I give there is I had a software engineer quit their job to go be a park ranger. I mean, these two jobs couldn't be more different. But there was something in this young man that said, you only live once, as the young people say, YOLO, right? So he took that opportunity to apply for the job, you know, sit for the test, and was granted the opportunity. And so he left tech to go into the Forest Ranger Service. And so I think about people who are actually using this time for self-exploration. And I think the third thing is really people just reimagining what balance looks like for them. I'm the proud mom of three, you know, wife, a community member, educator, all of those things. And working from home was tough. You know, we had to balance school and all of the, you know, taking care of parents and all of those types of organizations. And so when I think about balance, Some people said enough is enough. And quite honestly, as a working mom and as a working leader, businesswoman, I had to make some trade-offs. So there were times where I could not, you know, attend the meeting, but I had to be very clear about who would, you know, step in on my behalf, or what I had to sacrifice when my kids needed me to step in on a school assignment. And so I think that I had the privilege of having the ability to make choices, and sometimes people didn't. So if there were two working parents in the home, we saw a lot of women take the back seat and say, you know, I'll take on the household responsibilities and let my partner do other things. And so I think there were just a number of things driving that. But I will tell you, women were hit harder than men during this pandemic. And I think some of it is based on what we've had to balance. And the other side of that is just burnout. People are tired.
So organizations are confronted with this reality, people saying, I've had enough. I need more from the place I work in adjusting to my, you know, the requirements of my life. So how do organizations adapt to this and, I guess, try and build a more flexible, I would say, giving culture to their employees?
I think you first have to start by assessing what the culture is. And one of the things that I'm excited about at Anaplan is that we are doing this sort of values or principle-based assessment right now. And it's very interesting to ask your business leaders, what do you think the culture is? And then you ask the exact same set of questions to your employees, and the results tend to be different. I have not completed this assessment yet, but I'm speculating that it will that will be the outcome just based on experience. But I say that to say, once you understand where you currently are, then you can identify where you want to go. So I call that getting to point B. And I think when you think about point B, you have to think about those things that you mentioned, like flexibility, like impact, the ability to give back. When I think about the newer generations joining the workforce and future generations, there is an evolution that businesses need to have, and it needs to be more focused on people and mission. And I think if we anchor our values on people and mission, so that includes your current workforce, but also building a pipeline. When you think about the mission, it is all about who you serve and what type of customer experience you're creating. I think if we anchor our businesses on that, then we can withstand the innovation trends that are coming.
So one thing that I've noticed anecdotally as this younger generation enters the workforce and work from home culture is changing is it feels to me like there's a stronger separation among maybe younger people between the work life and the personal life. When you work from home, it's easier to turn your computer off and sort of leave that behind. How do you think about that?
I have a slightly opposing view on that. And that is because when I was forced to work from home, I had to reimagine my bedroom because I was living in the Bay Area and we had a smaller living quarters. And there was no opportunity for me to close my laptop and forget about work. It was as soon as I rolled over to see my desk and my laptop. So I naturally worked more, actually, when I was home. And so I think that when you think about a generational shift, I do think that it is a bit different. Primarily because my parents grew up working in blue-collar jobs where, you know, they went to work every day, they punched the clock every day, and then they came home. Well, I have a white-collar job and always have since graduating college, and there is no start and end time, right? And so my parents had a mentality that, you know, I stop working when I, you know, clock out, but for me, that's not necessarily the case. Because there's always been these blurred lines. However, let's shift to my daughter. Just graduated college in May. And as she's thinking about work, while she's also in a more corporate job, she's now thinking about how she separates work and home a lot more because she doesn't want to work all the time. And I'm like, yeah, well, you have to establish yourself. You need to learn the company, learn the culture. And she understands that, but that doesn't resonate as much as it did with me.
So do you think when the pandemic started, and as you mentioned, you would sort of roll out of bed and your work was right there, was it harder for you to create that separation, or was that not an issue for you?
It was harder for me to create the separation primarily because there was nothing else to do. I mean, it was watch the news and open your laptop. And I think I tried to overcompensate for the fact that I wasn't in the office. So because no one could see me, I needed to make sure that I could prove that I was actually working, which is one of the things that I think is difficult when we think about returning to work. Right now, business leaders are really plagued with what RTO looks like. And for me, I'm encouraging more of a hybrid culture just because we have five generations in the workforce. And the way that each generation looks at returning to the office is different. And so because we have a spectrum of employees, we should have a spectrum of options for these employees. So if there are employees who want to work from home, you know, 80% of the time, I think that's okay. But I think that as business leaders, we need to have a day that we all agree on is like a in-office day so that we can have essential business meetings. We'll have essential events, culture gatherings, and so on, just so that we can create a level of camaraderie. Because what I will tell you, being at this conference is overwhelming because the physical connection that we missed during the pandemic is real. And so you see this desire for people to want to connect, to hear more about what you're doing, and really to kind of catch up on what the latest trends are or what people think they will be. And while you can do that over Zoom or Teams, you're still missing that real eye contact. You're missing that handshake. You're missing some of those personal connections that I think help drive connection in people and business going forward. So,
are there any sort of, I guess, general guidelines or concepts that an organization should abide to when they want to make their employees happy or keep them satisfied with the work that they're doing?
I always say ask the employees what they want. I mean, that's with any human-centered design thinking, right? Like ask your customer and not assume that you understand what it is that they're looking for. That's the first thing. I think the second thing is understanding that there's no one size fits all. I think that's a part of the issue. I think that people try to take this cookie cutter approach and apply it to all different types of organizations, sizes, cultural values, and the like, and it doesn't work. But when I think about guiding principles or like some foundational things that should be done, a couple things come to mind. People are the greatest asset. And so you should make sure that you're focusing on your people, finding ways to not only empower them, but to develop them. So that's important. So reskilling has become a thing lately. So even as you think about recruiting new talent, a lot of focus has been on retention. How do we retain our current talent? And so while I talked about the great resignation and people leaving the workforce, some people are staying because they are committed to the mission, but they want to do something different. So really invest in that people development. I think the second thing is really around culture and really understanding like what that means. That is really about the working norms of your organization. Right? Are the values predicated on respect and empowerment? Because at the end of the day, we're all humans and we want to be respected as such. And I think the third thing when you think about these principles is really thinking strategically about partnerships. You know, whether that's internal stakeholders or external stakeholders, who and what should we be doing in order to stay ahead of the curve? And, you know, for Anaplan, as we think about some of this work and some of the retention, we are looking at some external partnerships, one of which is with Correlation One. And that is an organization that is helping us build a talent pipeline of historically underrepresented talent. So Black, Latinx, and Native American talent, as well as women, and really thinking about what that looks like in the data science space, as well as Anaplan model builders. And so I really think that partnership will go a long way, not only for Anaplan, but for the tech industry. And so we need to be thinking more strategically about what partnerships we can embark on to make these changes.
Yes. So you mentioned talent retention and specifically among historically underrepresented demographics. There's a long overdue push to recruit more people from these communities, particularly in STEM. But unfortunately, when employees enter into, you know, organizations that historically people like them haven't been a part of, a lot of the systems are unfamiliar, sometimes hostile to them, to their perspective. So how can an organization be more welcoming, allow them to sort of not have to exist with this added psychological stress in their job? What drives that change?
So I think that the change starts at the top. So there has to be a commitment from leadership to actually build relationship with the institutions that many of these individuals may be coming from. So, you know, one of the things that I like to do is create a minority serving institutions strategy that is comprised of outreach to historically Black colleges and universities, better known as HBCUs, Hispanic serving institutions, tribal colleges, and women colleges. But it's not enough to build those partnerships. I think the additional support that's needed is really around mentorship. So every organization doesn't have the resources to create a formal mentorship program, but, you know, even a simple onboarding buddy or some sort of pairing for people who may be new to the industry or new to the sector, I think is extremely important, because I want to say, I forget what the actual statistics are, but within the first 30 days, people know if they want to leave your company or not. And so you want to make sure that they have a very warm and welcoming experience. I think the going back to what I talked about in from a leadership commitment perspective, authenticity is important. And so as a woman of color, I've often feared that I can't come to work and show up as my authentic self every day, all day. And there are cases and times when I can't. I don't feel comfortable, or it won't be well received. And so you have to create this environment where people feel like they can actually bring their strengths to the table, because I think at that point, when they are being vulnerable, you get their best ideas, you get their best input. And so that level of authenticity, or the environment that will allow for that authenticity, comes from leadership commitment. And so our leaders have to embody and display that behavior for the reciprocity to be there. So,
yeah, something Peter Searcy, a member of your panel, mentioned is when an employee comes to you and says, hey, I need whatever XYZ. And even if the manager doesn't understand why they need it, they should at least be able to listen and say, okay, I will help you out with this because I want you to succeed.
I agree with that 1,000%.
Okay, so I want to talk more about company culture. You know, you mentioned earlier, especially in the context of this conference, it's very important to have that in-person connection. But moving forward, we will be shifting a lot of things virtually. Is it possible to create company culture virtually? And what does that look like? I would ask, beyond sort of virtual happy hours.
I really don't know. If I had the answer, I would be consulting and be rich. But I don't know. I do not know. I think you have to be intentional, right? So I think the virtual happy hours, like we're pretty much over it. But I think a part of it is finding different connection points. So a lot of the work in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space is moving beyond inclusion to more of belonging. And the reason that's happening is because sometimes folks in the majority groups, right, our males, our white males specifically, sometimes think that some of the DEI initiatives aren't about them. They're like, hey, this is not for me. I'm not a woman. I'm not a person of color. So that's for them. And in fact, it's really not for any specific group, but it is to bring everybody along and create equity so that there's a level playing field. But the way that we can do that is through belonging. And the way that people feel like they belong is by creating various connection points. And I think for a company to succeed in creating a strong virtual culture, you have to find connection points. So one of the things that I've suggested is really doing like more employee features where people can tell more about their background and their history. Because if I go on to say, you know, I'm the parent, I am the daughter of two immigrants, and I graduated from Howard University, and I also graduated from the University of Maryland, and my daughter played softball, and I also, you know, grew up as a dancer, and my husband went to Ohio State, and all these things, I think that through all of these different community organizations or things that I identify with, others will find connection points. And if there are similar connection points, then we draw up a conversation and there's an opportunity to feel like we belong to a similar organization and or practice. And I think that level of belonging is all people crave. People just want to fit in, regardless of how you identify. And I think that we have to find more opportunities to create that, especially if we're in a virtual environment.
You mentioned how important it is to show up to work and feel like you can be your authentic self. And I would imagine letting people share more of their history, their perspective, their personality would assist in that considerably.
Absolutely, it would. It's just everyone's not ready for that yet, because the way that my parents grew up, I think it was a little different where this is what you did at work and this is what you did at home. Now I see a little more of the blurred lines. And so as these lines continue to blur, we have to find different ways to merge those integration points.
As you mentioned, you know, talking to your daughter entering the workforce, she wants a bit more separation between her work and personal life. Your perspective is it's easier to create a positive company culture when you do give a little bit more of yourself into your organization.
I do. I strongly do believe that you have to kind of let your guard down a little bit and kind of show the human side of a person. And I think when you see that human element, that's where you find those connection points.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you see organizations facing in trying to institute these changes?
One is there's not a foundational understanding of what inclusion, equity, belonging is. So you have to create a shared understanding of that first. And secondly, people don't understand why it's needed. And every organization's why is different. On the panel today, Peter said, you know, for the FBI, the why is operational risk. If we don't have diversity, then we have the opportunity to kind of let these threats erode our culture, the work that we're doing, so on and so forth. We won't have the opportunity to connect with certain communities, so on. When I think about Anaplan, Anaplan is a software as a service, and it is a tool and a platform that we're selling. And as we gain market share and enter new markets, we need to have a diverse workforce that mirrors our client base. And so we need to make sure that we have people that can connect with all sorts of folks. And so that's one of the Anaplan whys. And so really, each organization should think about the why and make sure that everyone understands it before they start to do any of the work that comes along with it.
Listeners who caught a recent interview with the director of NIST's Innovation Laboratory, Elham Tabassi, about AI may recall that efforts to bring in more perspectives when considering AI risk are very important to avoid bad things from happening. You know, this may sound a little silly, but I also just think it's just nice when people can show up to work and not feel bad about themselves.
I agree.
Sharika, thank you so much for sitting down and talking to me. This was wonderful. Any final thoughts?
Just thank you. I think the conference, ELC 21, has been absolutely engaging. It has been great to reconnect with old partners. And we are really excited about the rest of the conference and what 2022 will bring.
Me too. And I hope anyone listening who didn't get a chance to come this year, I hope to see you next year.
Right on.
And that's a wrap on The Buzz with ACT IAC. Join us next week for more hot topics and top issues affecting the federal technology market. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. And follow us on Twitter at ACT IAC. More information about today's show can be found in the episode notes. For more insights, visit www.actiac.org. Thanks for listening.